Hiya. Today we have the Senate Committee on Local Government, Urban Affairs and Housing, Wednesday, July 15th, 1981 at 3 p.m. in Hearing Room B. We're going to have a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2013, then we're going to have a work session on House Bill 2521, finally, and House Bill 3132 relating to condominiums.
We will open with a public hearing and work session on 2013, and because of our time constrictions, we will devote a maximum of a half hour to that, and if we can do it in a shorter time, we will. We have not, we have been constricted in time on 2013 because we just got the bill, and as everyone here knows, this committee is dissolved as of 6 o'clock today. I hope we'll be done before that with the three bills that we have before us. So, can we have the sign in for 2013?
Chairman, I thought you were going to see if we were going to open a meeting for prayer.
Well, you started it off.
This
is our last meeting.
All right. Kevin.
Okay. Sorry, we tried again. Let's start off with Shirley Gold and all right, Shirley. You can come up if you want to, Joyce, anybody else from the House?
Well, I think Joyce plans to review the bill, and I'm only speaking to one section of the bill.
Well, Joyce, were you going to review 2013?
Just in concept, so people understand.
Well,
about 5 minutes.
Come on up, then. I'll first have Jim read the explanation for the committee and see if you want to add anything.
The pattern of ownership for residents of a planned community closely parallels that of condominium ownership. Nevertheless, there are no statutory guidelines established for planned communities as there are for condominiums. The major problem resulting from this statutory void is that there is no disclosure of the rights and responsibilities of both the developer and the lot purchaser regarding the management, maintenance, and continuing operation of the planned community. The bill addresses this problem with the following provisions. Maintenance, management, and continuing operation. First, it prescribes the contents of the declaration, that is, the document establishing a planned community, and bylaws, and establishes procedures for amending them. Second, it prescribes powers of the Homeowners Association and of the Board of Directors. Third, it specifically permits the Homeowners Association to negotiate its own management agreements, service contracts, and employment contracts. Next, it requires the developer to establish a reserve account to replace certain items of common property as they wear out. It prescribes a time frame and procedures for turnover of administrative control of the planned community from the developer to the Homeowners Association. It requires the formation of a transitional committee composed of lot owners to aid in the transfer of administrative control. It requires the developer to provide the association with documents pertinent to the administrative operation of the planned community at the time of turnover of administrative authority. It clarifies easement policies, and it requires the homeowners association to obtain insurance against loss or damage to the common property. As for the developer's rights and responsibilities, the bill permits the developer to retain certain rights regarding future development of the planned community even after administrative control has been turned over to the Homeowners Association. Second, it prevents the Homeowners Association from amending the declaration to limit special developer rights. Third, it allows the developer prior to turnover to amend the declaration or bylaws in order to comply with the requirement of the secondary mortgage market. After turnover, such an amendment must be approved by the association. Fourth, it requires the developer or purchaser for resale to provide a purchaser with information and documents pertaining to the obligations incurred with ownership of a lot within a planned community. And fifth, it establishes a 5-day right of cancellation of sale of a lot within a planned community. This right expires at closing. The bill prohibits local jurisdictions from requiring that all planned communities in the locality include common property or a homeowners association.
By the way, for the committee, that relates to Section 7, which we will have some discussion about.
Okay. The bill's provisions do not apply to several types of planned communities, including, first, those with fewer than 20 lots, second, condominiums, and third, any planned communities in which the total assessment against all lots does not exceed 2% of the total value of those lots. There'll be discussion of that last item, too.
Okay. Joyce, do you need to add anything to this?
No, except to say that we have, I think, carefully through the past months and through the past interim, actually been in touch with technical people who represent the financial community, the lending institutions, the title companies, and those people who would be involved in administering such an act. And there are differences between this and the Condominium Act. There is no enforcement involved, and this is certainly left up to, we're not asking the real estate division to implement this. The Planned Community Act has no administrative machinery. So that what we've done is left it up to the local governments and the filing process and the people who private right of action to in fact enforce this bill. We think it's an important piece of consumer legislation to have, and we've found a need. Any number of people who've had difficulties with homeowners associations understanding their rights and responsibilities as they're bought into those types of developments. So we think it's a worthwhile endeavor. We have Betty Niven here who will testify. We have a staff person, Phil Fell, who, if you have questions about specific sections, I think he could in fact provide more specific technical details about who we've contacted. And that's all I have to say in addition to that.
Does the committee have any questions to Representative Cohen with reference to the provisions of the bill? All right. Now, unless there is someone else that needs or feels that there is any reason for any further explanation of the bill in general, trying to expedite this thing, I'd like to turn to some problems that have been identified or controversies with reference to the bill. And particularly, I'd like first to draw your attention to Section 7. And this is the section which in the bill provides that prohibits local jurisdictions from requiring that all planned communities in the locality include common property or a homeowners association. You have in front of you a B engrossed bill with hand with amendments engrossed in it, which are dated 7-15-81, and they say, at the top it says, proposed amendments of Betty Niven with concurrence of Home Builders Association, and it says, see page 4. And on page 4, I'd like to direct your attention to the proposed Section 7. Now, my understanding is that the individuals involved in this bill at this point would either like to have the original Section 7 repealed, so that there would be no such prohibition upon the action of local government. And the alternative to that is to adopt the Section 7, which you'll find on page 4. Now, Representative Gold, on that proposed amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Shirley, for the record, Shirley Gold, State Representative, Southeast Portland. My only reason for being here today is to speak to what is now Section 7 of the B. Engrossed 2013. I objected to it very strenuously in our House Committee on Housing and Urban Development, and in fact I voted against the bill in committee. That was how strongly I felt at the time and still do. On the floor of the House, I had by then thought it over and decided that I thought the bill was too important to cast a vote against it, and so I spoke to my objections and proceeded to say that I would, if it passed, follow it over here and try to persuade you to delete Section 7. I am not prepared to support Betty Niven's proposed amendment either. I think we're dealing with something here which is of tremendous impact, in fact critical impact, upon local governmental jurisdictions. That is what Section 7 does, and even what Betty Niven's amendment does. And in my estimation, we're impacting a local governmental unit for abuses that have not been delineated to us. Within our housing committee on the other side, we never did have described to us the abuses that the local jurisdictions were supposed to have committed, to have brought about the restriction that Section 7 imposes. The rest of my message is that on the floor of the House, and some of those folks are here today, there were some 14 people some of whom voted for the bill because they thought it was a critical piece of legislation and wanted to follow it here and do their number, you know, in relation to this. Others who voted against it, but there were 14 people who strenuously objected to the inclusion of Section 7. I can name them for you if you'd like. Some of them are here,
but
all of them are.
The objection that you're raising is to impose this kind of a limitation on local governments with reference to
without the substantive material to indicate why this is necessary. That's it in a nutshell. And I think I've really said enough, considering your time limitations.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to have somebody tell us why they want Section 7?
Yes.
Okay.
As I said, I want to try to narrow this down, and I need to get the representatives because they have a floor session at 3:30, and I'm trying to get through if I can. Any further questions? We also have Jane Cease, who is here, who indicated that she was supporting the position of Representative Shirley Gold. Margie Henderson?
For the record, I'm Margie Henderson, representative from District 40, and I will be brief because I know your time is limited. I support the bill in every part except Section 7. I very much object to that, and that's why I had to vote no on the bill on the floor of the House. I very much respect Betty Niven, who's a constituent of mine, and the work that she's done. But having been a county council and working with a PUD ordinance, I think that Section 7 is a very bad measure. I think our county, Lane County, is one of the first to adopt county ordinances on PUD. I do not support the proposed amendments. I think they're an infringement with what the local government should be doing. For example, in our county, they use PUDs. You can go below the minimum lot size on the actual lots if you have a common area. So I think that should just totally be taken out of the bill. It's a good bill for consumer protection, but don't limit local government's ability to protect consumers on PUDs. So I'm very much in support of deleting Section 7.
Any questions? Thank you. Darlene Hooley?
Mr. Chairman, we're talking about Section 7 in the handbook.
In the original bill.
Yes. If you look at the original bill, Section 7 in the original bill says, on or after the effective date of this act, no city or county shall require a developer to create a planned unit development with common property or a homeowners association in order to develop and market residential building sites on any land within the jurisdiction of the city or county. And then it goes on that it is not retroactive. And it's proposed to eliminate that. The alternative to eliminating that is the language which you find in the hand-engrossed bill on page 4, which shows the language which is being proposed by Betty Niven with concurrence of the Home Builders Association. Okay, Darlene?
Yes, Darlene Hooley from District 27.
I voted against this bill because of Section 7, because if you look at Section 7 and read it carefully, you will find out if you leave Section 7 in there the way it's written right now, you might as well not have the bill, because you won't have PUDs, is what it amounts to.
Why do you say that?
Pardon?
Why do you say that?
Well, if you read it, it says, city cannot, after the effective date of this act, that's on page 4, it says, no city or county shall require a developer to create a planned unit development with, I mean, one of the reasons you have a planned unit development is to have some common ground, to have some different kinds of housing. You can group houses together, so you can have some common ground. And it says, if you require common ground, or if you require a homeowners association, then you shall not require a developer to do a PUD. So I'm saying the rest of the bill is sort of unnecessary if you don't take Section 7 out.
Okay.
I would like to see it eliminated. I do not agree with these amendments, particularly Section 2, because there on Section 2 you're saying you can have a PUD with common property only if you've got fragile soil, or you've got unusual conditions, or you've got slopes. And that's usually right now common ground on any kind of development. So I would oppose the amendments, and I would hope you would delete Section 7.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. Annette Farmer? I'm trying to restrict it to this amendment if I can at this point, Annette. We had a general explanation of the bill.
Annette Farmer, East Multnomah County Representative. Mr. Chairman, I also voted no on House Bill 2013 the other day, because from the beginning I felt that when we have here movement in this country toward local control, I felt that the bill, with particularly Section 7, eliminates the right of a city or a county to make a decision on a development that is properly within the jurisdiction of the city and the county. For that is the only reason. I do not support the amendments of Beth and Evan. I think they might be all right for condominiums, but we are not talking now particularly for the condominiums, so I am against those amendments. I just felt that Section 7 should be removed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eldon Johnson? Yeah, Eldon, did you want to testify on this one? Oh, all right, you didn't line up. All right.
You're as an interested, very interested party in
Thank
the,
you.
In the issue.
All right. Betty Niven? Now we'll get the other side.
You'll get the explanation of why you have the amendments before you. This, the issue of whether or not builders would in effect be forced to create planned developments within the definition of this bill has been before the committees that have worked on it from the very beginning, and it seemed to be a difficult one to deal with because quite obviously cities should have some authority to do their planning. However, nothing happened within the bill until the last hearing of the House Housing Committee, at which time we had excerpts read from the Clackamas County Code, which in effect said that you had to have a planned unit development if you had a lot more than 1 acre in size, if you had any common walls, and if you had a series of things, which in effect was very, very limiting as far as allowing for any conventional development at all. There are many predictions that practically everybody's going to be living in this kind of housing as far as anything new is concerned within the next 10 or 15 years. This is why I worked so hard on this bill, because it's very important to try to straighten it out so it becomes a satisfactory way of life. However, I prepared the amendments because it did seem to me that there was a point as far as the home builders were concerned in terms of people being able to choose between buying into a planned community or a planned unit development and being able to buy a small house on a small conventional lot. The cost of moving into a planned unit development is not less, it frequently may be more, because you, by almost by definition, if you have much common property, will pay for services which you would otherwise perform yourself. It's on behalf of the buyer that I prepared the amendment, not on behalf of the home builders. And I want to make that point because the Housing Council position is one of trying to assure that people have choices. I would hope that there would not be many counties or cities like Clackamas that would go so far. I think that planned unit developments are useful, and in many cases they are essential. Subsection 2 is introduced here because quite clearly they are essential if you have terrain that isn't really suitable for development into conventional lots.
Let me stop you a minute then.
Certainly.
What your amendments would say would be that the local community could require common property if there was land within the development that couldn't be used otherwise.
Correct.
But if but you could not require common property for any other reason,
the only, well,
any other planning reason
you couldn't,
decided upon by the community.
Right. You couldn't require common property. Sub 3 says, however, that if a local developer, if a developer creates a development that includes common property, then the local government certainly can require that there
yep.
be a homeowners association.
Right.
In fact, that's essential if you're going to have
but
common
essentially
property.
What the issue here is, should a local authority have the power to say in a particular development that shall be developed with some common property, such as a parkway or a major passageway or something like that? Period.
Period. I would like to make one other comment because I think I probably have more experience than anybody in the room with planned unit developments. It is not always necessary to have common property. You may end up with some rather complicated lot descriptions, but it is possible by a series of requirements with respect to the placement of the structures and the placement of access and the giving of easements, it is possible to achieve many of the benefits of a planned unit development without the necessity for common property. It's easier for the city and easier for the developer to do it with common property. It isn't necessarily easier for the people who buy into the project to have to live with the consequences of doing it with common property.
Okay.
Chairman,
yes.
Why can't they develop it with common property and then give the common property to the city as a park and not have any need for any
well,
ownership.
There was one instance that was brought before the committee of a developer who, I think it was in Oregon City, who was going to do a planned unit development, and the city said, don't do it, we don't want that, we would prefer to have you dedicate land and we would develop it as a park. But in general, that common land is spread out throughout the community, and the city does not want it dedicated to it, it does not want to maintain it. I think, however, Senator Simmons, this is one consequence that might evolve if Section 7 were to become part of this bill, as in the amendment. I think it would cause cities to think about whether they could work out systems that would have that effect. But
I think it has happened in Tigard in a couple of places.
Yeah. But that is generally the reason is it's just too awkward.
Okay. Any further questions?
There's a very small amendment at the top of that page.
Yes.
Which, while I'm here, I might as well comment
yes.
on. This is the one that determines whether something is or is not a de minimis planned community and therefore not doesn't come under the Act. And the calculation, as it appears...
Let's
in
give us the context.
Yes. The context is within Section 6, which indicates what kinds of planned communities are exempt. Your committee administrator referred to the fact that ones that contain 20 or fewer lots are exempt, ones that are condominiums are exempt, and then are ones that are exclusively commercial or industrial. Then we come down to a de minimis one. And the de minimis one may be one that's defined or accepted by certain federal or state agencies as de minimis, or if there is no such definition being applied, one for which the total estimated annual assessment against all lots in the planned community for maintenance and reserves, as these reserves are required under Section 15, is not more than 2% of the estimated value of all the lots against which the assessment will be levied. The home builders were concerned that 2% figure was too low, and I pointed out that it was arrived at by starting with what is generally considered currently as being de minimis, namely not more than a $30 a month service charge, and working backwards, and it works out that this 2% is what you would come out with, $16,000 lot, which is a typical lot price at the present time. So what the home builders have suggested, and I agreed to include as an amendment, is the alternative of using the $30 a month as the top. so that in the event that someone happened to have some very inexpensive land, it wouldn't turn out that that fact put them under the act when it was they were still really very de minimis.
So, is there any objection to this amendment that you know of?
No, none that I know of.
Mr. Chairman, yes. You speak of the $18,000 lot.
16.
2% of 18 is 360, I think. But,
all right. I think I did a little rounding up when I did this calculation.
Anyway, is that the value of the lot or the value of the lot with improvements?
This is the value of the lot with the improvements other than the structure. Water, sewer, streets. That's
but
a very...
But don't require reserves for maintaining an empty lot, do you?
No. But you may have something else in that. You may have open space, which is partly developed and for which you have reserves. You might have an awfully small meeting room not to have reserves larger than that. But you may have street lights that are your own and that are not from the city and for which you have to establish a reserve. Reserves are required to be established for anything that's commonly owned and that will at some point have to be replaced, and that determination is made by whether it's insurable by a common all-risk carrier, as far as whether it's something else. So you're not going to go out and insure a rose bush. If you had a whole garden of magnificent roses, you might go out and insure it with Lloyd's of London or somebody, but they're not going to do that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is this the time to talk about reserves then?
Well, what do you want to amend the bill?
Well, I don't like the concept of building up reserves.
I will speak very briefly to that, Mr. Chairman. There has been a fair amount of discussion. I would say that among the problems that are faced by homeowners associations, which are addressed by this bill, there are four that are critical, one of which is not getting enough information, one is not getting any assistance in transition, one is having too high voting requirements, and the other is the failure to start reserves. If you don't do them in the beginning, it's very difficult to get them later, and it doesn't get any simpler for people to be able to afford to meet extra costs as the costs rise. The reserve concept is one that has come out of many years of experience in other places where they've been at this longer than we have, but whenever I have met with people who are in homeowners associations, this is a topic that inevitably comes up. Those people who have them are delighted, and those who don't say, it never should have gone on this way without reserves being started.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a member of a homeowners association, have been for 10 years, and we're on a pay-as-you-go basis. Our expenses are relatively spaced out. We're spending $6,000 or $8,000 now for painting, so we're assessing ourselves for 6 or 8 months advance assessments. We feel that there's no point in building up cash in the bank that we as individuals can invest to our better advantage ourselves. In all of the 10 years, the discussion has been, and it's been practically unanimous among the people in our association, that we do not want to build reserves.
Mr. Senator Simmons, what you're referring to, what we're talking about here at this particular section, what we're referring to was exemption from such reserves.
Well, I think the bill in Section 15 requires reserves.
Well, you want to move to eliminate reserves, we can do that.
Well, I'd like to hear a little bit more about the bill before I move to amend it.
I think we're at the point that if you have a specific objection to the bill, I think we ought to take a motion on that objection so we can get on, because obviously any prolonged discussion of the bill means that this committee cannot act on it.
Well, I question, Mr. Chairman, whether a bill of this complexity coming to us today with amendments, whether in 2 hours or less, we can make a decision.
The
bill itself.
Senator Simmons, I do propose to put it to a vote, and if the committee wants to vote it down, they can. If they don't, they can vote it up. So we try to get as much discussion as we can within the time limits we have, and I respect your feeling about it. I'm partly responding to the amount of time that has already been put in it by the other House, and I know the interim committee. So, but I certainly will take any motion to strike out anything, and we'll put the whole thing to a vote to get the end. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Do we need to add anything more here? Any further questions with reference to Mrs. Niven's testimony on Section 7 and the amendments which would further restrict the type of plan development which required the reserve payments?
It doesn't further restrict it. It makes it possible for them to be, in the event that $360 is more than 2%, it allows them still not to be included.
That's
so
what
it
I
makes
meant.
It less,
That's
makes
what
it
I
less
meant.
Restricted.
Yes.
Okay.
Is there a motion? Are you ready for a motion and amendments?
Well, is there anything further for Ms. Niven? We do have, I think, Dave Barrows. Were you on this?
I'm going to pass if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The Association of Oregon Counties, et cetera, here. I don't have the name, but I... ALC, LLC, City of Eugene, Clackamas County, City of Portland. Are you speaking for all of these people, Jerry?
No, I've got Mike to speak for all the important
Okay.
I just pick up the minor ones like City of Portland.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Michael Houston, League of Oregon Cities, and Jerry Justice, Clackamas County. We promised you brevity and we'll try to deliver.